Welcome to Your Aged Care Compass podcast. Join us to find out how to support your older loved ones at home. We're going to help you make sense of Australia's aged care system. We talk about legal and financial considerations for aging and how chronic health conditions impact your older loved ones' well-being. And we share real life stories of where it went wrong for people and how we got them back on track.
Hello everyone and welcome to today's episode. I'm Coral Wilkinson, your host, and I have Adrian Morgan of FlexiCare joining me again. Adrian is the General Manager of FlexiCare, an independent, not-for-profit organisation which supports older people in Brisbane's southern suburbs to live well in their own homes and community. Adrian is also currently the chairperson of the Queensland Home Care Committee for Ageing Australia, which is the Aged Care Provider Association's new name. And Adrian was previously a member of the National Aged Care Alliance. Adrian, when we spoke last week, we discussed FlexiCare's approach to service provision with home care packages, and we touched on some of the changes that current home care package recipients are asking or might be seeking in relation to supported home, which is the new in-home aged care program that begins on July 1st this year. July is almost on our doorstep. How prepared do you feel FlexiCare is for the implementation of supported home?
Look, hi, Coral, and how are you? I think we're as ready as we can be, really. A lot of the information coming from the department on this, the way this new program would work has been very slow in arriving. So it's been kind of a little bit provided over a number of months. And at this point, we still don't have all the detail, but we have a lot more information than we did a few months ago. I think we've taken that information from the department and worked out, so what does that mean for the services we provide? What's it mean for the participants that we support? What's it mean for our employees? I think we're about as ready as we can be, but we have some more preparation to do once the final information's made available by the department.
Absolutely. That's fantastic to hear that, Adrian. So let's take a look at how supported home differs from the home care package program. Currently, the home care package program offers people four different levels of funding, which can be used for whatever kind of service or support they need, including purchasing equipment or completing modifications to their home. These levels of funding are known as packages. Under supported home, there'll be eight levels of funding known as classifications. So packages, that terminology will subside and the terminology we're using from 1st July will be classifications. Could you explain for our listeners, please, what the different levels or classifications will be compared to those four levels of home care packages as we have now? And what are the funding comparisons too?
So, like so many things with supported home, it's complicated. For the people who are existing people receiving one of the four levels of a home care package, they will automatically transfer across to supported home and they'll maintain their current funding level. So they won't swap across to one of the eight new classifications as you've described. They'll hang on to what they've got. But for the people who are newly joining support at home, they will go to one of the main eight funding levels. And they range from the value of those funding levels range from about $11,000 a year through to almost $80,000 a year. These are figures that the Department of Health and Aged Care haven't quite pinned down yet, but they're giving those to us as an indicative range. And as the person's needs, as assessed by the independent assessors, increase, people can move to a higher level of support. The same thing will happen to people who move across from the existing four home care package levels. as I said, they stay on their current level, but if they're assessed as needing a higher level of support, they'll then move across to one of the 8 supported home levels.
Yeah.
So, and look, there are a couple of other complications with this we may as well mention. And one of them is that there is going to be an interim funding level introduced where yes. the department says people are waiting longer than they should be for their support. And that will be equivalent to 60% of the full funding level. So that's quite new and quite different. Yes. And it's a way, I think, of acknowledging that many people at the moment are waiting far too long, but it'll give them, if you like, a stepping stone to be able to get towards their full funding level whilst they wait for their name to come up as being eligible for full funding.
Yeah, that's an excellent point that you've raised. It's not that interim funding is not something that certainly I've been speaking about recently, but very reassuring for people in terms of people currently waiting up to 12 months for their home care package, which is just inconceivable, really.
Mm.
People cannot wait that long. That something that's reassuring about support at home is they're going to get more than half, 60%, as you said, which can start them off with, you know, the absolute essentials that they need whilst awaiting the remaining 40% of that level being available to them. Yeah.
And as you say, look, a lot of people are waiting a year at the moment for their home care package. Mm. I think the average that the department quoted a few months ago was 11 months as the average. So if 11 months is the average, it means some people might be a bit quicker than that, but some people are waiting longer. And that really means more than a year. And that's a long time to be waiting for something that's really something that's essential to keep living well at home. So this 60% is a good idea. The issue that we've got at the moment is I certainly haven't yet picked up when they say waiting too long. What's the definition of too long?
You know what? I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know. I think too long is waiting more than 2 weeks, but that's not going to be what the department says.
No.
We're going to have to wait to hear what their definition is, but I hope it's a reasonable one because it really will help people if it is, 3 months or something like that.
Yeah. And look, from the work that we do and our experiences, if people know, they know that that package, that funding is almost within reach, and 3 months is about that time. You know, people can kind of hang in there. They know that funding is very close. I just hope that too long is not going to exceed 3 months.
Mm. Yeah, we should lobby for that, if nothing else, as should everybody listening to this.
Yes, yes, they should. No longer than 3 months, please, Minister. So just to reassure people, as of the 1st of July, a person who currently receives a level 4, let's just use this as the example, a level 4 home care package, doesn't align exactly with the classification 7 or 8, but we know that people can't be worse off as they transition into support at home. So these people are going to sit between a classification 7 and 8. You know, if they need to go up to an 8, they will need a reassessment. But just to reassure them that they're not going to lose funding and slot in at a level 7 classification.
Yes, yeah, that's very important.
So although there are similarities with the funding and services people can receive under support at home, there will be differences from July the 1st with regard to what a person can receive, whether they are a current recipient or might be entering the system after July the 1st. Presently, a person has the flexibility to use their funding for support or services that meet their needs as their needs change. But from July the 1st, if a person doesn't have their needs identified at the assessment and those needs aren't included in their support plan, they won't be able to receive services unless they're reviewed again, by the assessment team as their needs change. So essentially saying we're going to lose that flexibility that we currently have. I'd love you to comment on that, Adrian.
Yes. Well, I think you've nailed a very significant issue in terms of something that we're going to lose when we move into support at home. That wonderful flexibility that we've got at the moment under home care packages, the ability to respond really in real time to things that might be happening in people's lives, changes that are occurring. And an example I often think about is the person who hasn't needed nursing previously, but suddenly has a need for nursing. And look, that can happen so easily. No.
Yes.
I hear often of examples of people who are participants with us. They might bump their leg on the weekend and suddenly yes. they have a wound and they've got a problem with skin integrity. They don't want that wound to become infected. They don't want that wound to turn into something quite problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, we can, with their agreement, and just swing the funding towards providing some nursing. They might have a bit less of something else. Nursing starts immediately. Now, this flexibility is something that we will lose. And it really, one of the things that's going to be so important is that those independent assessment organisations are very quick in responding to these kinds of situations. They're meant to be, but how will that play out in practice? Because at the moment, many people in many parts of the country are waiting typically months for an assessment.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you've actually raised a point that I've been talking about this past week as well, being a nurse myself and working in this space. Older people have fragile skin. It doesn't take much to develop a skin tear that then can go on to be a wound or really quite a nasty wound. So I share your concern around if someone isn't approved for nursing in their first assessment, perhaps less 24 hours later, they might have a skin tear or a wound that needs nursing care. Realistically, how quickly are these assessment teams going to review those people? I'm pretty sure it's not going to be that quick. And I cheekily put out a call out to all these assessment workforces that please, when you're assessing older people, please think of their skin integrity or their continence, the things that they would have a nurse involved. And if you can take a few moments to screen for that, please include nursing in their support plan. But not just nursing, allied health. Like, it's so important to get it right at that first assessment.
Yes, it is. So this will be one of the things I think we've just got to watch how it plays out in practice. Yeah, but I imagine it'll be one of the things that will cause problems for people in the first few months at least.
Definitely.
Of support at home.
And if it does, again, you know, I hope that the department might stumble across this podcast and hear us talking about this and reconsider that if it's missed in that first assessment, well, let's just change the rules and just include nursing and allied health, because just about everybody needs it. They really do.
That's right.
They might not recognise that, but honestly, they do. So, anyway.
And they might need it very quickly.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. The same really applies to podiatry.
Oh, it does. Podiatry, exercise physiology, occupational therapy. To me, these are the essentials. These are the foundations that we keep people well and able and safe in their own homes. So whilst they might need some assistance, you know, domestic assistance or someone to help with their yard or their transport, the foundation is actually keeping people well and able and independent so they can still participate in those tasks. So if I had it my way, I would definitely, if I was still assessing, I would be including nursing and allied health in everybody's support plan.
I totally agree.
So under support at home, a person is assessed and their needs identified. The support plan is created and that then informs the provider what services and support they can use their funding for, what will be included in the care plan. There will be, from the 1st of July, there will be a defined services list under support at home, and there are three categories within that. Clinical is one, Independence is another, and everyday living is the third one. What does clinical mean in this instance, Adrian?
Most commonly, it will be nursing, which is absolutely core to the clinical. But also, we're talking about allied health. All the allied health disciplines would be part of clinical as well.
Yeah.
So that's what the department's putting under the clinical care. Yeah. And it's good to see that. Also, there will be an arrangement for care management to also be treated in terms of the client, the participant contribution at the same rate, which is a zero rate. In other words, people don't have to pay for out of their own pocket these services, which is a very good thing.
It's excellent. It's probably the thing I'm most excited about with support at home. You know, I'm always going on about the benefit of clinical input to keeping people well and able and safe at home. And the fact that clinical care will not ever, as that's what we're being told now, you know, be subject to that co-contribution, to me is something that we should be really excited about.
Yes. Yep. Which really goes back to your previous point, because if people are going to get that, if, in other words, for them to be able to make the most of those services, they've got to have them approved.
Yes.
They've got to be on this person's service list.
Absolutely.
So, yes, I'm 100% with you. Let's get everybody with access to allied health and nursing.
I agree. So if a person is assessed as needing support within the independence category, what services could they receive under that category?
Commonly, there'll be things like personal care. There'll be assistance with showering, toileting, grooming.
Yes.
Those kinds of services, they are often quite personal services. And, so again, a very important adjunct to what we were just talking about in terms of the nursing and allied health. I really see many of these as being, you know, really intrinsically part of the continuum. So the nurse might do some things with the person, but then the person who's the support worker, who's not a nurse but is well-trained, can step in and then, under guidance, support the person with the personal care. It also includes things like medication support.
Yes.
Supporting the person to self-administer medication.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. And then the third category, everyday living, what services would a person receive if they were wanting to access support within this category?
So domestic support, commonly help around the home.
Yep.
Cleaning, help of that nature, maybe doing the washing, putting the washing out on the line, making the bed. Those kinds of domestic activities would typically be there. But another thing that's actually been caught up in this everyday living category is accompanied shopping.
Yes.
Which is something that is very common. A lot of people get support to do their shopping. And look, I know that for many people, the accompanied shopping is far more than buying groceries.
It is.
It's a social activity. It's going out into the community. It's probably having a cup of coffee while you're out.
Yes.
So I'm really actually quite disappointed that the department has put the supported shopping, accompanied shopping, in the same category as the domestic. In fact, I've certainly argued strongly that it shouldn't be there at all. It really is more appropriate back in the independence category. Because the other thing that fits in there that I should have mentioned is the social support. And that is things like supporting people to go on outings and things like that. We know that people's quality of life is very much enhanced if they can remain connected to their community.
Absolutely.
And for many older people, because of mobility issues or simply confidence issues, it's not as easy to get into the community as it might have been in the past. Mm. So to have some support to do that becomes very important.
Yeah, and look, where the conversation we're leading into is people might be saying, well, what difference does it make? Well, the difference, the impact is actually going to be the contribution fees. And this is where it really shows if you want services from one category, might be achievable within your financial means, but if you need more from another category, you may not be able to afford that. And so you're going to make the choice about what can I afford? And I know that accompanied shopping or social support, if people are having to, you know, if people's circumstances dictate that they can't afford, and we know there's a, you know, a hardship provision, not for this discussion, that's another episode entirely, but people will say, well, I'll go without my accompanied shopping, which is terrible because it's vital that people stay connected to their community. And it really factors in with, you know, purpose and meaning and mood as well. So I'm really nervous that people are going to potentially be making a choice about, I'll just choose my services based on how much they're going to cost me, which is really doing them a disservice. So having said that, let's talk about that now. Let's talk about the fees. So clinical care, one of those categories, is the only category not to have any fees associated with it, but the independence and the everyday living do. Can you please explain for us? I know like this is literally a whole episode in itself, Adrian, but just on the conversation we've just had about people potentially making a choice about less expensive or, you know, things that they won't have to contribute so much for. Can you unpack, you know, what these co-contributions mean and what that means if someone's like, what difference does it make between independence and everyday living?
We probably should lead into this part of the conversation with just clarifying that people who are being grandfathered, which is what the department calls it, won't have to pay these fees. There are a group of people who were part of the home care package system on the 12th of September.
Was the 12th of September last year?
2024.
Yeah.
If they had a home care package on that date, or they had been assessed as eligible for one on that date, this conversation we're about to have won't apply to them.
Correct.
So if we just make sure that we're not making people worried where they don't need to be.
Sure.
But everybody else, and that's the majority of older people who are currently getting help under the government's various programs, including, for example, the 800,000 people receiving a Commonwealth Home Support Program. So unless they are already assessed as eligible for a home care package, just didn't have it, then they will have to pay these fees. So the way the government has structured it is that for people who have those independent services, and that's the personal care and the social support and the medication assistance, they will be required, if they're a full pensioner, and all of this goes to pension status, if you're a full pensioner, they will have to pay 5% of the total cost. If the person is a self-funded retiree, so don't have any pension at all, they'll have to pay 50%, half the cost will have to be met as a co-contribution by those people who are self-funded retirees for the independence category. For people who are part pensioners or for people who are self-funded retirees with Commonwealth medical cards, health cards, there is a sliding scale between 5 and 50. So where people will fall, I'm waiting to learn that. I haven't heard that information yet, but it will be somewhere in that zone between the 5 and the 50 if they're a part pensioner. So that was the independence category. So we talked also about the everyday living category, which was the things like the domestic support, accompanied shopping. The minimum people will need to contribute for that will be 17.5%. That's if you're a full pensioner. And if you're a self-funded retiree, though, that could be up to 80% of the full cost, 80%. So that starts to become a significant amount of money. So coming back to your comment about people rationing the services they're going to get based on the cost, that could well be an issue for many people. We already know that there are a lot of participants in the system that don't have a lot of spare money. In fact, some basically don't have any. And we don't yet know what the hardship provisions are going to look like from the department.
That's and it right. will,
and it in fact will be the department that will decide in future. So in, if people will need to fill in a form and make their argument for hardship, I'm looking forward to seeing what that is and being hoping that it's not too, let's call it mean. Hopefully it's not too mean and that people still have a little bit of funding left over to spend on some discretionary things before they become ineligible for the hardship provision. But we know there'll be, just by the nature of the way these things go, there will be probably a lot of people making the decision to not have things that are actually quite important to them because they cannot or cannot afford them.
Yeah. I'm really glad you raised that point and reassured people that people who are currently receiving a home care package and people who were in the national priority system as of September the 12th, this conversation does not apply to you. Listeners, if that is you, we're talking now about new people coming into the system as of the 1st of July. So please be reassured. You will not have to, if you were not contributing anything presently as of the 1st of July, that will continue. You will not have to contribute anything for your support ongoing. And the minister has actually publicly stated that there's no time limit to this. I know one of the big questions we were all asking was, are people going to be grandfathered for 1 year or 2 years? Like, when was that going to cease? But it's not going to cease. It's going to be as long as that person needs that support.
Yes, yes. And look, the only other group I think we need to focus on just briefly are the people who are paying income-tested fees under home care package, because there is quite a lot of people who are paying something towards their home care package cost on the 12th of September 2024. And those people will make a contribution under support at home for their independence and everyday living, but the top percentage they'll need to pay would be 25%. So this is starting to sound complicated to people. It is. I don't think they should be at all surprised. And really, it's in many ways, I think each person will need to work out what's my particular situation.
Exactly.
Does all this work for me?
It's so much more individualized. Before, we could sort of, you know, we had ballpark figures and we kind of knew if you paid the income tested fee, you paid the income tested fee. But because of these categories now, that's changed. And so it certainly is case by case for each individual. And look, it's like I said before, we could discuss this for the rest of the day and try and explain it. It's very complex to explain. And I'm being asked to explain it. I'm doing a presentation next week and I'm just kind of thinking, how am I want to explain it for people, but how can I say it's so complex without worrying them? Because I don't want them to worry. But I guess the people who are listening to us talk today, the people who are researching, who are out there discovering what's going on, are probably mostly people who are in the system right now, who were in the system as of September the 12th. So just to reassure them, but then come July 1, we'll have a whole new cohort entering the system. And that's when we really have to put our thinking caps on and be able to convey this as simply and as clearly as we can, because it's almost a standalone topic.
It is.
Community pharmacies keep Australia healthy. With 6,000 locations nationwide, they're open early, late, and longer for convenient, accessible, and safe care. Pharmacists provide home medicine reviews, dose administration aids, and essential vaccinations. Thanks to additional training, many can now treat common conditions like ear infections, wounds, and skin issues. They also support management of chronic conditions in partnership with your healthcare team. Ask your pharmacist how they can help you and your family stay well.
Adrian, let's talk about care management now. What does a care manager do? And I think last week you said that FlexiCare has, you have your own terminology for this role, which is the...
Home care partner.
Home care partner. That's
now,
right.
We've been calling that the role that for a number of years now, because that's the, I think that's the right relationship.
Yes.
Between the person in that role and the older person being supported. Yes. So, and the function by the department is called care management. So the home care partners do care management. It's a really, really important role.
Mm-hmm.
Because the sort of things they do, they're the person who stands beside the older person and helps them basically work out how to get the most from the home care system, from support at home, to help to give them information, to help them research things, certainly to develop the detailed plan of the services that they want, to work with them on the changes they need to that as their needs are changing, to help get all of this get organized, to advocate for them, and then just to monitor how all that's going. The way it works from one participant in the system to the next can be quite different too, because some older people don't need very much guidance at all, and some really don't need any, but most need some. Honestly, yeah. Most need some, because it's a complex system that they're working in, and it's the role of the home care partner to understand that in depth and be able to help them navigate their way through all of that.
It really is a big role, isn't it? And I think that recipients or participants, the people who are receiving the support, really don't understand how big that role is. So I'm glad you highlighted that. And another thing, I really loved what you just said about the home care partner stands alongside or beside the person.
Mm.
It's kind of like an ally, and that's what a really good home care partner does.
Exactly. And look, the other thing with home care partnering is that some of the people who really need very, very little assistance home care partner-wise today, something changes in their life, and older people's lives often change quite quickly. It could have been their partner might have gone into hospital. There's a person who's supporting them. It might be that a family member moves away who was helping them previously. It could be that they themselves have a stroke or fall. And suddenly things are very, very different. And at that point, helping the person work through, okay, we're in a different position now. How do we continue to optimize your situation to ensure you are as independent as possible, that you can safely be in your own home and community? How do we keep you connected to your community? Again, it's really very important that the older person's calling the shots.
Yeah,
ultimately, they're the person who's making the decisions, but the home care partner walks beside them to help make good decisions.
Mm, that's fantastic. So come the 1st of July, with support at home, the fees are changing as well. So currently there are two fees. One is the care management fee, which can be up to 20% of the level of the person's home care package. And then there's also the package management fee, which can be up to 15% of the level of funding associated with that package. So potentially providers can charge up to a maximum of 35% as we are right now. But from 1st of July, these are changing. The care management fee is being reduced down to 10%, or, you know, there might be providers who want to charge 8% for care management, but 10% is the cap. This is a really big decrease. And I know providers have been really concerned about this. Adrian, could you comment on that and talk us through, you know, what the decrease in the care management fee might mean for recipients? And also I'd love to hear your perspective on what it means for a provider as well.
Well, this is a very big change, as you say, from 20%. It's been halved without a whole lot of explanation to 10%. For the participants, what it potentially means is if the organisation that's supporting them can no longer afford to have the number of care partners or care managers that they had previously, maybe it'll be harder to get access to care managers. Now, I know, I'm happy to share my organisation's story here, because we don't charge 20%, we charge 15%. And we reach that figure by looking at how much does it really cost us to provide a high quality home care partnering support. And it's fairly straightforward. We pay the wages of our home care partners out of that money. And it's about 15%. Yep. Of the package. So when it comes back to 10%, we're going to have to do some very serious thinking about how do we absorb or manage that so that the degree of availability of the home care partner to the participant is not dramatically reduced. Mm-hmm. At this point, we're not going to reduce the number of home care partners we have.
And excellent.
So that's not on our plans, but it is one of the things we're saying we're going to have to watch what happens, because if we start losing large amounts of money through this, then we cease to be viable as an organisation, and then that's not in anybody's interest. So we'll have to monitor it very, very carefully through the first few months when we're after the 1st of July. But our aim is very much about not diminishing the quality of support that the older person experiences, because we know how valuable it is.
Absolutely.
And they tell us that. And also for the families.
The other perhaps slightly different, it certainly might be different for some providers. I've spoken to other providers who have said we're already kind of operating on this kind of model, is the proposal to combine that 10% care management fee as like pooled funding that will be spread across all the recipients, all the clients underneath that provider. Is that going to work? What are your thoughts on that, Adrian?
Well, the truth is, it's exactly how it operates now.
Yes, I thought you might say that. Yeah,
that's because the funding, that 15% that is currently charged, is effectively pooled, because we don't say to somebody who suddenly has a lot of care management needs, "I'm sorry, you've used your 15% this month. You have to stop getting care management." We really do it on the basis of need.
Yeah.
So that's not new. So
no.
Can it work? It can work in the sense of, as long as the pool of money is sufficient to actually pay the wages of the people who are going to do the work.
Yeah.
I've also heard Coral organisations say that they're not, it doesn't cost them 10% of the income to deliver care management. I must admit that when I've then asked questions of them about how do the care managers operate, it's certainly not as close a relationship with the participant as we make sure our care partners have with our participants. They need to know them well. They need to be accessible to them. And they need to be able to, when somebody's needs increase, that they step up that support respond in a timely way.
Yeah, excellent. So under support at home, and this is a change that people, that are currently having a package, this will apply to them. Under support at home, there will be quarterly budgets rather than a monthly allocation of the funding or the subsidy as it is at present. At the moment, people who aren't spending their monthly subsidy or funding each month can roll over an unlimited amount of those unspent funds, allowing them to accumulate funding. Sometimes people do this intentionally, perhaps to save up for a large purchase like an electric bed or an electric recliner chair. And sometimes it just happens because for whatever reason they aren't using their funding every month. The amount of funding a person can roll over under supported home is going to be capped. Can you please explain this, Adrian?
Yes, and it's a quarterly cap. So let's say in the quarter you've been allocated $2,500. What the department is saying, up to 10% of that, and say that might be $250 or $1,000, whichever is greater. So in that case, it would be $1,000. You can roll that over into the next quarter. So you come into the next quarter with some money already in your fund. But that's the most it can ever be, the amount you've got in the quarter. Now, some people have mistakenly thought they can keep adding up each quarter. So if they don't spend all their money in, say, four quarters in a row, they'll end up possibly with $4,000 carry forward. That's not how it works. It's still a maximum of $1,000 or 10% of whatever they were funded in the most recent quarter.
That's right. Good point to make.
Yeah. And look, this is actually a very sensible change in my view, because previously there were a lot of people, for whatever reason, had quite large accumulations of funds that they really did never spend. And it really means that the community's money to be available to support older people is being held for their benefit that they'll never use. And other people who really need the assistance, and we've talked about a 12-month waiting list, were effectively being denied that assistance. So this is a smart move.
And I agree with you.
Having said that, I actually think it should be 25%. To give a little bit more flexibility, but the concept is a good one.
Yeah.
Of having a capped amount that you carry forward.
Excellent. So under support at home, we have some separate but sort of aligned new funding pathways and programs. One of them is the assistive technology and home modifications funding, which will mean that people won't have to save up for those big ticket items like the electric height adjustable bed or the electric recliner chair. Could you explain this additional funding stream and what the different levels of funding are within this new stream, Adrian?
Yes, and this is a really good idea as well, because it was not a good idea to force people to forego important services in the past to enable them to save up for items that are going to be important for their independence. So I think broadly this is a very good move. It's important to stress that unlike currently, if you need, for example, let's use an electric wheelchair as an example, you'll have to be independently assessed for that. At the moment, your home care organisation just can do that. They'll get an assessment from an OT or a physio for that, but now we'll have to send it to another organisation to do it. So just being clear about that. So you ask about the funding levels. There are two different pools of money here. We've got the assistive technology money. We've got the home modification money. So they're different pools of money. And look, they are either $500, $2,000 or $15,000 for very high cost items. And look, so you think of it that way, you don't just get given $15,000 though. You've got to it's actually tied to the purchase of an item that you need. But there are those, if you like, caps there that department's trying to indicate. Some will be fairly low cost items, some will be moderate cost, and some they recognize are actually quite expensive. Same applies for the home modifications. A very simple change might be a few hundred dollars, up to a couple of thousand dollars, up to $15,000. Something that has had quite a lot of comment from people has been the fact that there is that $15,000 is actually a lifetime cap.
Yeah.
It's not a per item cap. It's a per lifetime. And so there has been this, a lot of, let's call it vigorous discussion about whether that will be sufficient if, yeah. for example, the person needs a fairly significant home modification to be able to continue to live in their home safely. The fear that is being raised, and particularly with the high cost of building these days, is that people will be forced inappropriately into residential care.
Yeah.
Where they don't want to go into residential care, but they can't afford from their own funds to pay the difference between the $15,000 and the actual modification.
What it might be, yeah.
And the documents from the department are very clear. What they're saying is that the expectation is the individual will fund themselves there. Mm. That difference, anything extra.
So, Adrian, if a person has a home care package now and they're using all of their funding each month, and then come July, you know, a couple of months' time, they need a wheelchair or electric recliner chair, they could be reassessed and they could be approved to access this new funding stream, assistive technology. Is this your understanding of the situation?
Yes. Yes, it is. And look, I think, as I said, this is a very good development, makes good sense, but the person can get things, as long as they can get reassessed, and we talked earlier in our conversation about how long does it take to be reassessed, but let's assume that it's not an unreasonable wait to be reassessed. If they are approved for a particular item, they'll be able to get it quickly.
Excellent.
And which is a really good move.
Yeah. And there's three new short-term pathways. I'm just going to focus on two at the moment. So the second one that I wanted to raise with you is very new. We haven't had this at all under the home care package program. And that's the palliative pathway. I'm really excited about this because end of life is a space I love working in that space. So we're going to have an additional amount of funding that is aligned with a person's end of life. Can you please explain what this is going to, you know, what this means for people, this new palliative pathway, Adrian?
Yes, well, it's actually $25,000. And the requirement to be eligible for it is that a health practitioner, a doctor, or I think some nurses will be able to identify the person is expected not to live no more than 12 weeks or 3 months.
Yeah.
And then having had that identified, there will then have to be an independent assessment. So many of these things, you have to be independently assessed. If you're eligible for it, it is $25,000. Additional funding that can be fed in to support you in those last few months of life. I agree this is a very good move because people want the opportunity to end their lives in their own homes with the things and people around them that give them comfort. And I am hoping that this is one of the significant strengths of support at home. I don't want to pour cold water on it, but I will a little bit, because what the department has said is you've got to spend that money within 16 weeks. So the ability for medical practitioners to identify that people have less than 3 months to live is not a perfect
exactly.
science. I've spoken with general practitioners in particular about this, who've said, you know, sometimes you can be pretty sure. But other times you think that somebody will pass away in that time frame, but they don't. I think what that will create, if the person actually is still with us, which is great, at the end of that 16 weeks will be a point of crisis because suddenly a whole lot of extra supports are going to be pulled out. I think they're going to have to revisit this.
Yeah, my understanding is that, you know, if the person is still with us after the 3 months or the 4 months, and that palliative pathway funding ceases, they revert back to their, let's just say, package, using the current terminology, or classification funding. Mm. So, you know, we would be hoping that these people are up at a classification 8, because that's, you know, that's where they will need to be sitting. But as you say, having cared for my own dad at home, we were forking out a lot of our own money on top of his level 4 home care package to keep him comfortable and to support him to die at home. So, you know, even $78,000 on a level 8 classification, I believe it's not enough, but it is what it is. Mm. And I think, you know, you mentioned about how people are going to feel. What are they going to do at the end of the 16 weeks? And potentially it could be panic stations.
Mm.
I guess I'm hoping that they will have had such good support during the 3 months or the 4 months that they will be well equipped to manage their loved one's needs at home. They'll have to get a little bit creative, possibly. I don't know if they'll have to dip into their own funds, but I'm hoping, for me, just the allocation of this funding and this new pathway does something that I think we need to do more of, and that's open up the discussion about end of life and what people choose at the end of life, and how they might want to die, what they don't want to do, which is, for a lot of people we support, is they don't want to be transferred to hospital and die in an emergency department or die in the back of an ambulance. So I'm encouraged that by having this funding now, people will start to talk about end of life more.
Yeah, that's a very good benefit of this. And look, I think overwhelmingly it's a really important initiative to include this as part of support at home. I'm just hoping, once the experience of people who do happen to live a little longer is addressed by the department, they might have a fresh look at this.
Yeah.
And I mean, what you said is my understanding also, which is they would revert to their previous classification level, but they may not be on a level classification 8. They might be on 4 or 3.
Yes.
And the other thing is, apparently the funds that they are not spending will be put aside in some way. So I think the department's hoping there might be some funding there for them to spend to top up what they, so that it's not such a big cliff, the funding that they're going off.
Right.
But if they're towards the end of a quarter, it'll all revert to $1,000 or 10%. I think there's just a little bit more working out to be done here. But I think it's all, I think because the concept is so good.
Yep.
I think they'll do a bit of rethinking, I hope.
Yes, I guess all will be revealed in a few months.
It will.
We've covered a lot of ground today, and you've addressed some of the biggest concerns people have about this new program, Adrian. We're only 2 months away from support at home being introduced, and there are still so many questions we want the department to answer. How is FlexiCare adapting to the changes support at home will bring? Are you about to take a holiday?
Yes. By the time this is shared with your audience, I will be back from my holiday. So what we're doing to prepare is that we have had a team of people who have basically been working on various elements of our preparation now for a number of months. And we've divided the task up into a number of chunks and people to focus on different things. And they're basically getting on and doing that. We catch up with each other, the people who are working on that, every few weeks and say, how's this going? The first thing we did is put a plan together.
Yeah.
And now what we're doing is essentially implementing that plan. But so much of that plan depends upon the department handing over the information that we require that they've promised at particular points. Because when we have the information, we can do the detailed planning. Can't do it until you know what the detail is.
So great to hear you say that. I love that your team has broken it up in different groups and doing different tasks. I think for FlexiCare clients or recipients or participants, that's going to be very reassuring. So look, you know, as we've said, there is so much to understand about support at home, and July 1st is coming very quickly and we still don't know all the detail. But you've given our listeners insight into what the changes will mean for them in the coming months. It's been great chatting with you again, Adrian. Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Thanks, Coral.
If you want to take a closer look at how FlexiCare supports clients with home care packages or follow Adrian's wise words about the sector, all the links and the contact details are in the show notes below. Have a great week, everyone, and I look forward to chatting with you again next Tuesday.
Hey, care community. Thanks for listening to this episode. So you never miss a show, make sure you subscribe to our podcast. If you'd like to know more about what we do, head to our website, cmeacn.com.au.